Hi guys, hope everyone's well and welcome back to the Improvement Podcast. Today I am joined by a good friend of mine, David. I'm going to let David introduce himself to everyone who is either listening or watching.
Hi everybody, my name's David Rettie. I have been in the fitness industry in some regard since about 2019. I have worked as a gym instructor for 4 years now, I want to say. And I've been a personal trainer for the past year and a half, pretty much full time. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for that. And first of all, we'll start off, give us a brief kind of introduction. How did you get into the fitness industry? Like in terms of what made you want to work in the fitness industry? How did you kind of initially get into it? Was it through sport or?
Well, I've always been interested in many sports, but I just felt as if, where my own training and stuff, I always really enjoyed helping other people, you know, giving advice where I was used to work. I just found that I had a knack for it, really, because I've always felt like it's one thing to have knowledge, but to be able to pass on your knowledge is another thing. And it's something I really tend to enjoy doing, especially because people get into their own fitness journeys for certain reasons. You know, it could be because they're unhappy with how they look. It could just be to, you know, get stronger. It could be to rehabilitate an injury. And this was something, obviously, that I had a bit of experience in with a lot of those. So being able to help people in all the aspects as well was a really, really good experience for myself. So I enjoyed it.
Good. I completely get what you mean regarding being able to actually help someone and it's different knowing the knowledge, but actually being able to kind of transfer that on and actually kind of break that down and be able to explain that to individuals is like a completely different skill itself. And I think something absolutely fundamental if you're like a personal trainer, online coach, or helping someone in any industry, really.
Yeah, 100%, man. You hit the nail on the head. A lot of people will get into, it might be a PT themselves, but that's one skill you just really need to learn as you develop your own skill as a person and as a PT.
100%. And from my own experience, I know I started off as a gym instructor and just simply online coaching itself, but I found something that being a in-person personal trainer has taught me a lot is actually how to speak to people, how to actually give people certain cues or that, because you can see and you can instantly see if you give someone a certain cue, does it work, does it not work, in terms of trying to help someone's form or that. Whereas online, if you give someone a cue, you don't really understand, right, does that actually help them, does that change their form? Obviously you can see if they communicate that back through a form clip or that, but yeah, I think the beauty of in-person personal training and having experience in the trenches is you get to actually see in real time what certain languages kind of work and actually get through to individuals and help them improve their form or what help them take on board certain cues, etc.
Yeah, mate, and people are at different stages of their own fitness journey and they have different levels of knowledge themselves. So as a PT, you might actually be training someone that's a bit more advanced than another person. If someone's even just a beginner, going into a lot of detail and using big strong words and that they might not really understand, being able to break it down in a much more simpler way is really good as well to be able to help them.
100%. And because I found that myself, especially when I was a gym instructor, you take people for inductions, and if you're in the fitness industry and you've been training for years, it's just basic English, what a set is, what a rep is, or what volume means. Whereas some people don't even know what a set is or a rep is. So I think it's good always whenever you're starting with someone, thinking, right, just pretend they don't know anything, because then you're not going to overwhelm them or think, right, or assume they know things with which they may actually not.
Yeah, because a lot of this stuff can be really second nature to us, but you have to really remember that when you are doing an induction PT session or anything, because you could just say one thing and a lot of people as well will just nod as if they understand, but they actually don't. So you have to be able to pick up on that as well.
Yeah, especially because joining the gym, it's obviously not for us, but it's an intimidating place, especially if you're not been before. So you're joining the gym and then someone says, oh, what's a set? You don't want to, like, nobody wants to make themselves out to be silly or dumb or that or not know certain things. So I definitely agree there. And then, they just simply get lost. And then whatever you are going to communicate to them, it's just going to go one ear and out the other, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Well, when you come in, like you said, you could be very anxious. You could just be really start. You could just be starting. And even just walking at the gym, seeing everything, not knowing a single thing. And there's all these equipment, all these different people doing these different exercises. And yeah, you walk in, it can be very overwhelming. And you have all these different types of programs, different types of, like I say, styles of training. And yeah, it's very easy for anything to go over your head.
100%. I think that's something so kind of fulfilling about being a PT. Like you said, it is so intimidating when people start the gym or literally just working as a gym instructor itself. Like when you have an induction, like you've got the power to set someone up to either like have a really scary experience in the gym and maybe not want to go back, or alternatively, you've got the opportunity to kind of give someone like a really good start in training and give them a good foundation of knowledge and have like a massive impact on obviously their life and their fitness journey as a whole way.
Yeah, 100%, man, 100%.
And you mentioned when you can introduce yourself that you kind of briefly experienced like an injury because you were on about your own experience. Do you want to kind of dive into kind of what you were meaning and just kind of expand on that?
Yeah, man. Well, I've actually been pretty unlucky in my time of training. I went through a period, I want to say, 3 years where I'd injured my back pretty bad, and I'd back-to-back injured my knee really bad, dislocated it twice, and gained a big bunch of weight. And yeah, I had to fix my knee at the same time of losing a big bunch of weight.
And how did that kind of start, or like what caused those injuries, and how did you kind of overcome them and get around the obstacle of maybe losing that weight? Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, so the first time I did it was in 2018 when I dislocated my knee. I was playing five-a-side. I don't know if anybody is listening and plays football, but the pitches are artificial, and I was wearing what's called moldy studs. So if you wear these studs outside in the grass park and you plant your foot on the dirt, doesn't matter really how dry the surface is, you can still twist your foot. But because there was a 50-50, I was coming together with another player, and because I said it was artificial, like I said, you can turn your foot if it's grass or dirt. You couldn't do it on this surface. So as someone ran into me and my leg, my foot had nowhere to go. So my kneecap came right out of place, and instantly the pain was like 100 out of 100. And that took probably around 6 months of kind of rehab going through the NHS, and unfortunately after kind of getting it back to a decent standard, it happened again when I was boxing. And then that's when COVID happened, and I unfortunately gained a big bunch of weight, although it was kind of my fault. I had, at that time, I had the attitude, you know, I can't move, I can't even walk, I can't even get down to do push-ups or anything. I may as well just sit and not really bother, and I'll fix it when COVID's over. But looking back, that was a complete wrong decision. So after coming out of COVID, I actually had my PT qualifications during that time as well. But coming out of that, I definitely had a lot to do. So I kind of just got the head down and got to work.
I like the transparency with how your views have changed on kind of how you handled that situation. I think that's definitely true. Like, whatever hand you're dealt, if you've got an injury, if you've got a setback, like you can always find a reason to adhere, to be consistent, find a way around some sort of issue, or you can use it as a kind of a reason or a crutch to maybe cause you to be inconsistent. Because like you hear about individuals who do go through a lot, like I mean, they're hearing about this bodybuilder, and like he was in the hospital for whatever reason, and he still like never missed a meal, it's like misses to bring him all his food in. It's like there's always ways you can adhere to things, or there's always an excuse you can find, and it's about which one you want to kind of go for.
Yeah, man. So I'm a big believer in that. That sometimes there's things that will happen to you that is completely out with your control, but it's completely always within your control for how you respond. And just focus on what you can control, you can still obviously get a lot done. And looking back there, I was that guy that was always, I used to be like this because of my knee and stuff. And I used to say, oh yeah, I gained a big bunch of weight because of COVID and because of my knee injury. But looking back then, man, I could have crutched down my street. We were allowed to go out for a walk, man. I could have crutched down my street, but I decided to sit in on the computer and drink alcohol and eat whatever I wanted. And it was a complete wrong decision, completely wrong.
Yeah, I appreciate your transparency with that. And in terms of your recent diet, or last month, I believe it was, you recently done carnivore for a whole month. I thought that would be really interesting to discuss on the podcast and kind of tell the listeners a bit about that. First of all, not everyone may know what the carnivore diet is, although it might be, oh, some people might think it's self-explanatory, some people may not. So do you want to explain what the carnivore diet is? And what foods you maybe can eat on the carnivore diet, and what foods you can't eat.
Yeah, man. So the carnivore diet is literally just meat-based products. You know, you're allowed to eat any form of meat, fish, eggs. You are allowed. So there's different stages. So there's, oh, different. What's the word? There's people that are a lot more strict, and you can get all the way up to the lion diet, where it's literally just meat, beef, and salt you're allowed to consume. I was pretty strict, so I allowed myself eggs. Meats, and I allowed myself butter as well. So some people allow dairy, some people won't. And the reason being for that is it is kind of a ketogenic approach where you don't consume any carbohydrates. So some carnivores will allow themselves milk, but because of the carbohydrates that are inside milk, a lot of people will be kind of frowning upon that. So I actually just consumed eggs. For the most part, it was just meat, eggs, and fish for 30 days. And butter. I add some butter too.
Right, quick question before we'll dive into it further. Do you still, your enjoyment for those foods, are they still as high as they were when you were on the diet, or is there any of those foods that you think I could not, I don't want to even look at it, or do you still enjoy all those foods to the same extent?
I have been eating a lot more, focusing my diet around basically basing it around eggs and red meat still, be just because of how I felt, Charlie. I can't deny it. If I could feel this good from eating, whatever, donuts or whatever, then I would do it. I don't have a psychological connection really to what I'm eating. I eat because I know it makes me feel good, and I know it helps me perform well in the gym and just perform well as an overall person. That's why I eat that way. But I still having a bit of variety. Yes, absolutely. I'm happy with that.
Nice. And so how did you find it? Like, what were the pros and what were the, oh, yes, we'll start off pros and then we'll dive into cons of the diet. What did you think in terms of the benefits of it?
Well, for a start, I think for anybody that wants to lose weight without using a calorie tracking approach, I think it's pretty incredible. I was very rarely hungry. How I was going about doing it, I was waking up and I was having an electrolyte drink, which I know it's not maybe full on carnivore, but I'll get to that when I get to the cons. But I'd have an electrolyte drink, and I would have a couple hours after that, what's called a bulletproof coffee, where you have butter in your coffee, and pretty much it steadily releases the caffeine. And because when you're on the carnivore diet, you're utilizing fats as energy, it does fill you up for hours. And I was finding myself that I wouldn't eat sometimes until from 12 till 3 o'clock. Sometimes we get to 3 o'clock and I hadn't even eaten. I've even trained and I'm still not hungry, which was very, very strange. And then obviously I would have my first meal, which was usually 5 eggs, 5 bits of bacon, and then obviously I'd eat a little bit later on. But yeah, the pros are definitely hunger management. You're not hungry. You will lose weight, assuming you still stay relatively active. Yeah, so I think I dropped something like 13 pounds in 30 days, which for someone like me who doesn't carry an awful lot of weight, I think that's a pretty substantial amount. Yes, a lot of it will be water, but still, it's still a lot to drop. And usually when you drop that amount of weight around my current body composition, I do notice a difference in the gym. I do feel slightly weaker. I feel less energy. I feel more brain fog. I feel a bit more agitated in day-to-day life. But I didn't really get any of that. And I, in fact, in some ways, I actually progressed in the gym. So the fact that I was dropping weight whilst at least holding on and some progressing in the gym, that was actually a pretty amazing experience for me. I also want to touch on how I felt mentally. I think it was like after the first 5 days, I remember going out a walk and my mind was so calm. And I did touch on that on my own video and stuff because having ADHD is like having like multiple tabs open on a computer. I'm always like, even right now, like I'll be sitting here talking to you, but I'm thinking about dinner later on. I'm thinking about tomorrow's session. I'm thinking about PT throughout the week. It's all going at once. But when I was on that diet on the 50 in, it was a complete mental calmness that was very similar to when I was medicated for it. But I didn't obviously have any other bad side effects. Now, it took probably around 3 weeks in before I had that like sustained mental calmness. It was kind of coming in little waves back and forth. But then after that, it was good that I can't deny it. It was good that way.
Nice. And from following along like with your experience with the diet, I think something that it really like from outsider looking in, I think it really reinforces just the benefit of eating a lot of protein. Like, because with like a high protein diet, like it's really hard to overconsume protein, because obviously any additional protein we consume, like we're gonna kind of convert that into energy through gluconeogenesis. So like I think that's something that people can take away from this episode, like especially if like how lack of hunger you had, especially like consuming things like butter in your coffee. Someone could think, oh, you'll probably like, overconsume calories. But the fact that like your hunger was low, see how you lost, I believe you said 13 pounds. Was that in any form like intentional, or was that just you kind of intuitively eating to round about your satiety levels and hunger?
Yeah, so the rules are with the carnivore diet, you can eat as much as you want when you're hungry. And that is what I did. I found myself not wanting to eat first thing in the morning just because I wasn't hungry. And yeah, and it actually was really nice because I was waking up and I was having that coffee and I was really, really productive in the morning and waking up without thinking, all right, I need to eat. That was pretty nice. But yeah, man, the like I was wasn't it wasn't my goal to lose weight. I was just going by the rules that I saw on this kind of Reddit post, really, that I could just eat whatever I wanted when I wanted. I think if I was even trying to lose weight, I probably could have lost more if I wanted.
Yeah, and I think the fact that like it came so easy, I think it's great and something people should strive for with their diet. And that's why it's so beneficial kind of picking the right food choices, because if your diet's going to be, if you're not going to be hungry, it's going to be more sustainable. And regardless if it is more sustainable or adherence is an issue, like see if you've got less perceived stress throughout your diet and you're not needing to rely on much willpower. And that stress that you have from really withstanding certain foods, from not eating and from having to manage your hunger, being hungry all the time, like that stress that's gonna, what I like to say to clients and to individuals is that your body doesn't know the difference between stress from training and stress from, relationship issues, or stress from just
That's
really
good.
having to use a lot of willpower from like a nutrition point of view. So if you can have less stress, it can be more sustainable, and it's a win, isn't it? It's gonna make life easy. It's gonna be easy to keep the body weight off.
Yeah, and 100%, man. And another thing I'd like to kind of touch on is like when you are in a state of hunger for a prolonged period of time, like in a calorie deficit and stuff, your body isn't just like just craving food in a sense of calories. It's craving nutrients, and that's what I will say as well with the carnivore diet. Like, there's such an abundance of nutrients. I think there's only you can only really struggle to kind of get your vitamin C or fiber in the diet, and that was something I didn't notice an issue with. People were saying that, oh, your digestion's going to be all messed up. Admittedly, the first couple of days I did have a little bit of a dot. No, my guts were a bit dodgy, but after that it was completely fine. In fact, I would actually say that my digestion was amazing throughout the whole thing. I guess you can say you don't get as much vitamin C. However, you can access that if you're willing to eat, liver and stuff. So you can get an abundance of nutrients, and I think that as well is keeps your body satiated as well.
Nice. And as for cons of the diet, what were the downsides of it?
The number one, dehydration, man. That was a problem. And that's why I was saying about electrolytes, because when you, supposedly when you go on this diet, you're obviously, it's in your carbohydrate, you will lose a lot of water and you will feel dehydrated a lot of the time. So they do say you have to use a lot of salt, but I was using a lot of salt on my foods and I was drinking a little bit more water as well. Nothing was kind of fixing it. So I did have to rely on electrolyte supplementation for it, because there was no way really I could function normally. There was times I was feeling kind of sick in the beginning, but apparently if I was to keep this going for months and months and months, apparently your body gets a bit more adjusted to it and you don't need to rely on them so much. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but that was my experience. Dehydration was an issue. Another con, really, would say it's a little bit harder to meal prep because I'm eating so much, you know, meat. It can be a lot harder to prepare. But at the same time, in a good way, cooking was a lot quicker because I didn't have to think about all these different mad recipes. I was just literally just cooking up meats. So I guess you could say that. Other cons, just not maybe be able to go out and not having a lot of variety in your diet. You know, eventually the carbohydrates kind of cravings, they do go. I remember like the first week, it was like a slice of bread was looking like a slice of Costco cake. But after that, after it goes, it's not that bad. You still kind of think about these foods though. Like I'm a big fruit guy, and looking at fruit, I did kind of miss having that in my diet. But there wasn't an awful lot of cons. Maybe if you were a bodybuilder or if you want to gain weight, it may not be overly beneficial, because I found it actually quite hard to, if I was to try and get the calories in and try and get, you know, enough to actually gain weight, I think it would be pretty tough, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense, because obviously protein's the most satiating, it's going to digest slow, so probably definitely not going to be the best idea if you want to push your calories up from maybe a digestive and potentially performance standpoint. And I think that's something like you touched on, like about the meal prep side of things. It's quite like, because there's not a lot of ingredients, it's convenient. And I think that's something somewhat valuable. Like see with your diet, see when you do keep things pretty plain, then it's gonna be quicker to prep. It's also like, why people struggle to lose weight, manage your weight, is see if like I tell someone, right, all you can eat is plain chicken, rice and veg or whatever, versus right, eat whatever you want, eat a pizza, whatever, and eat to your satiety. Like, what's going to fill you up more? Like, there's only so much whole food you're going to be able to eat until you're full. And I think that's why people gain weight, because foods are created to be highly palatable, to be really easy to overconsume. Because when you go out for dinner or when you buy something from the shop, their intention is not to manage your body weight or to keep you at maintenance or to put you in a calorie deficit. Their intention is for you to eat that food. So I think that's something valuable. Like, I think is something else to maybe take from it is keep your diet basic. Like, don't make things too exciting, because then it'll just be easy to overeat. But at the same time, you want it enjoyable enough to be sustainable. And I think there's a middle ground to be had there.
Yeah, man. And I guess you could say that as well. I did feel really good on that diet, and I will do it again. But did I feel so good because of what I was eating, or was it because of what I wasn't eating? You know, I wasn't having anything kind of processed. I wasn't having, you know, anything, no sugar, nothing really considered kind of bad for you. It was all strictly whole foods, straight from any sort of reliable source. It was that could be a big reason why I felt so good, because there's no all this added other rubbish chemicals and stuff that you don't even know what they are in the back of the packet. I wasn't consuming any of that, so that could have probably had a lot to do with as well why I felt so good.
I literally took a note there saying correlation or causation when you were talking just there. Like, is it actually the fact that you were eating these foods, or is it the fact you weren't eating certain foods?
Yeah, potentially, 100%. There's an argument there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like, hearing it from you, because I believe as you've touched on, I think you said in the YouTube video when I watched it, like you've came into this diet with quite like an open mind. You've not went into it thinking, oh, this is bad, this is that, or I'm doing this because these foods are bad for you. You've went in just kind of being open minded, wanting to give yourself a bit of a challenge and to try something new, which I think is great. Because if obviously you go into it thinking, right, this is bad for me, this is good for me, sort of thing, like then you could say someone's a bit biased, and but you've not really got any financial gain from eating 500 grams of 5% mince for your lunch.
No, 100%, man. What I personally experienced, like, was true. It was genuine, and it was enough. It was convinced me enough that, you know, when I want to diet down, get a bit leaner for a holiday or whatever, I will utilize that diet again. Will I do it as strict? Maybe not. I would probably add in a bit more seasonings. Maybe add a couple of things into it. Just you know, keep a bit of variety, so I can enjoy the process a bit more. But 100%, I did definitely feel good, but I did feel some of the negatives as well. And if it was opposite way about, and if I felt that it wasn't worth it, I was 100% going to say 100%.
Yeah, need to get your wee 10% off John Lawson's discount link.
100%, yeah, I'll take that.
John Lawson's is a butcher's, for people that didn't get that reference. I'm not sure if they even have them outside West Lothian, but as for what we've touched on, is there anything that we've not spoke about already that you think you've learned from the diet that can apply to people's diet when it comes to building muscle, losing body fat, that you think would be valuable for people to know?
Just to reiterate kind of what you said, the importance of actually having a substantial amount of protein in your diet, it's not going to harm you in any way. It's going to keep you fuller, especially if you're looking to lose weight, man. It's going to, like I say, it's going to keep you feeling fuller, it's going to help rebuild, it's going to help you in the gym. It's, yeah, definitely. There's not much more to touch on, Charlie. I think we've kind of covered it.
Nice one. And I definitely agree there. And I think the only potential time when it is maybe detrimental having so much protein is if you aren't getting a sufficient amount of fats for like hormonal health function, or you could argue like if you're not having as much carbohydrates. But then again, it depends who you're speaking to. If you're speaking to someone who's trying to optimize their performance and they're trying to step on a bodybuilding stage, and that might apply to them. But for someone who's just wanting general fat loss, then they already aren't trying to time their food around their session. They aren't nailing all the small variables, and it's not like they need to really stress over how much carbs they're consuming before a session, because they're not nailing the big rocks first. They're not in a calorie deficit, so it doesn't really matter if they are having X amount of carbs or not.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I would like to like touch on as well, like even just coming onto that kind of diet, just actually having a bit more fats in my diet, I actually did feel a pretty good benefit from it too, rather than just, I do think if you do have a lot of carbohydrates, it can spike your appetite a lot quicker. Obviously it's easier digestion, it just also goes without saying, but I think that people can benefit from having a higher protein and maybe slightly higher fats and maybe slightly less carbohydrates, depending on what your goal is. But yeah, definitely what you said there.
Yeah, and I think it's good finding out what works for you in terms of, you know, you're playing about with it. Like try a high fat diet, try a low fat diet, like what's your personal experience? Because if you find you can do something, you find it sustainable, you find it enjoyable, some other individual won't. And that brings me two points to make. First of all, like sometimes when you consume carbohydrates, you can actually feel hungrier. Like I found that during contest prep. Like if I consume more kind of rice, like sometimes if I just had like chicken and veg, like my hunger didn't really spike. But then if I had like a decent bit of rice, I just felt like I wanted to eat more food. So that's something maybe to consider with people when it comes to like protein time, or not protein time, just food timing as a whole. Like when you eat certain foods, does it fill you up? Does it cause you to be more hungry, less hungry, etc.? And also you did mention that, you didn't mention it on the podcast, but I believe you mentioned, what you have mentioned on the podcast is you consumed a lot more salt, you consumed a lot more red meat, but you did say that your blood pressure dropped to me, I believe.
Yeah.
Because you've had kind of issues with your blood pressure being a bit high. I'm not sure if that's genetic, you believe, but from the diet, like what changed with your blood pressure?
That's a good point, Charlie. Apologies for forgetting to mention that. I My family is, it's kind of like, as a hereditary thing. My mum's got high blood pressure. Her mum had a high blood pressure. A lot of my uncles have high blood pressure. For me, even though I'm a generally fit person, I run, I do martial arts, I do, strength training. I eat relatively good anyway, probably about an 80%, whole foods diet. I'm generally healthy. I normally walk about with pre-hypertension blood pressure. For those that don't know, it's roughly around, I think it usually be 150, 155 over 85, 90, which is, it's higher than it should be. And if I've ever had any form of appointment at the hospital or whatever, I always get that, "Oh, son, you've got high blood pressure." But yeah, so for my age, it shouldn't be like that. So I was actually quite astounded at the end of the carnivore diet. I did check my blood pressure, and it was down to, I think it was 110 over 65, I think, which is near perfect, which that completely blew my mind.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because if you speak to like the average individual, or if you go to the doctor or in school, like if people are on about like, right, how do you lower your blood pressure? Some common things you hear are limit your saturated fat intake and lower your salt intake. And both of those things you've done the complete opposite with and seen your blood pressure trend in another direction, which is pretty astounding to think.
Yeah, and I think obviously 5 minutes ago you did mention that it's important to trial things yourself. Because that happened to me doesn't necessarily mean it would happen to anybody else that's watching, but it is definitely something to think about and consider trying yourself and have a lot of play about with things. I actually used to get, because obviously when I was posting this on my story with steaks with a big slab of butter on it, people are like, your arteries, mate. But yeah, you've got to say that lower blood pressure is actually like the difference is staggering, to be fair. And I've actually not checked it, so I'll need to check in that I've added in more of a normal diet.
Yeah, for sure.
See if it's been back up.
And yeah, definitely that would be interesting. It could, because again, going back to correlation or causation, it could be, well, I think we actually spoke about this in person. It could have been the fact that your body weight was down, but you did also say that last time you were that body weight, your blood pressure was still on the higher end. So yeah, and I think people are sensitive to salt to different degrees. Like I believe there are some individuals who, if they consume a lot of sodium, it can increase their blood pressure. Whereas other individuals, like they can have like the opposite response. So again, it comes back to what works for you and trial and error. Like I always say to my clients, like don't demonize salt because it plays a big part in our hydration, our ability to perform, cognitive function. But what I like to say to them is like, right, well maybe try introducing this in if you're not having a lot, and then just see how your blood pressure responds. Like the worst scenario is you see your blood pressure increasing, you just don't have as much salt after that.
Yeah, exactly, man. I think I actually believe that it's more of the opposite. People aren't actually having enough salt on average anyway. But yeah, just like what you just said, the important thing is to obviously to monitor. I definitely incorporate a little bit more because we see it as well when we like do it to tinnitus with people, how often are their hydration is out of whack, man. So I definitely think it's important to trial it, add in a little bit more salt, see how you feel, see how you perform, check your blood pressure. If you're feeling good, feeling better, blood pressure is good, then fantastic.
Definitely. So, right, moving on from the carnivore diet, I feel like we covered that in a good bit of detail. Thank you very much for talking through your experience. I'd like to touch on, if it's all good with you, like what working with people in person, what mistakes do you see people first of all make with their training, and then we'll move on to their nutrition.
Just like from being a gym instructor or being as a personal trainer or both.
We'll go for both and you can take this where you want in terms of people who first step foot in the gym or people who've had a few years' experience. Like, what mistakes do you see individuals make?
I think the main one is definitely effort in the gym. You have to be, you're here, it's called training. You wouldn't see a boxer who's training for a fight, just run around the street a couple of times just doing something that's perfectly manageable. It's not about being stupid when you're in the gym, but you definitely need to be, increasing the weights over time. You need to be trying, pushing for more reps. You need to be aiming to progress week in, week out. And when I see a lot of people, even doing sets whilst texting on the leg extension, there's absolutely no chance that you are training hard enough on that. If you're able to text a message when you're using a leg extension, you're not training hard enough. You know, I'll even have see people having conversations during their sets, like you're clearly not creating enough stress in the body to do anything, in my opinion. It's different if you're doing a lot of warm ups, you know, feeding blood into the muscle, but not if you are if this is your working set, you know, and if you're able to text, have conversations, or not push all the way, or you know, stop when it starts to get difficult, then you're going to very limit your progress.
100%, I definitely agree there. Because like, regardless how perfect your form is, like if you're not getting those effective reps close to failure, then you're not going to be kind of stimulating muscle growth. We know we kind of need to be close to that failure point. And like, if you are obviously talking during sets, things like that, like one, your ability to brace is going to be diminished. You're not going to be able to create a strong brace. And two, you're not focused. Like, even if someone thinks they're training to the same level of failure, if someone's like talking, like their mind's not in the right place, so they're not going to get there all from the set.
Yeah, man. If you're not thinking, let's just say you got 8 in the chest press last week. You want to go for 9 or 10 or something. How, if you're talking about the football, or you know, like what you had for dinner last night, there's absolutely no way that you've got full intent there. Absolutely no chance. And if you do manage to get 9 or 10, like I would argue, probably the week prior, you probably weren't even training that hard.
100%. No, I definitely agree. And I think something that influences effort a lot, I'm not sure if you've found the same, but when people have like a background of sports, like their ability to go in the gym and execute effectively and push themselves a lot greater. And I think that helps me progress at quite a decent rate, because I've done judo for over 10 years. Like I've got my black belt, so I've done an okay level. And just because I was used to that pain tolerance that you experience in the gym, once you transition to the gym, it's easier to get close to that failure point and you progress at such a faster rate. Whereas I see some clients, and like I always ask clients, like, have you done any sports before this, just out of interest? Because the clients that you obviously get the odd anomaly, but the clients that usually have done sports before do have that ability to push themselves and have better technique. Whereas the people who don't, like, they get to failure and they're like a deer in the headlights and they just crumble, you know what I mean? Like they struggle to keep their form, they struggle to actually just push themselves to that degree and handle that discomfort.
Yeah, man, well, no one, if someone hasn't done sports or trained before, bringing to any level of discomfort is going to be a different realm for them. They've never ever experienced that feeling before of being up against it, you know, like being that's going through something that's really, really hard. So to keep a lack of composure during like those hard reps and stuff, that's something that does tend to take a while to kind of build the confidence and bravery even to go for it. And at the end of the day, training is like conditioning the body to handle difficult things that it currently can't do. So yeah, being brave to, you know, stay focused, like you said, to keep pushing when it is hard is the most important thing to me in the gym or any form of sport. Like when you were doing judo, your instructor wouldn't have consistently given you, you know, guys to spar with or to practice with that were a lesser ability than you. You would have probably been giving you people that were like better or at least on the same level as you, because that's where obviously that's your level to condition to obviously improve. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they obviously don't go completely hand in hand, but I think a big part of progressing in the gym is like pain tolerance. Like usually, and I think you should kind of lean into that discomfort. Like see, the more uncomfortable, the harder a movement is, probably the more stimulative it is. Like what I mean by that is if you're doing like a back movement, a chest movement, like if you're making it as hard as possible, you're not allowing your chest to collapse, you're keeping your shoulders back, you're keeping it on that target muscle. Like, so the things that make, like, I think you should try and make exercises difficult in terms of how you're executing them, and also make it uncomfortable, because usually, like, the part of the rep that's hard, like bottom of a leg press, you know what I mean, bottom of a squat, like, it is like that, like, that's the stimulative part, and usually, like, you'll naturally want to do the opposite, so you'll naturally want to make it easier, not go to the hard part, whereas you should do the opposite, lean into that discomfort, lean into the difficulty, because that's usually where the value lies, in my opinion.
I could not have said that better myself, mate.
And anything else you want to touch on with trainer, or should we jump in mistakes we see people make with nutrition?
I see people that are beginning in the gym, one thing that they tend to focus too much on the small things, you know, like what's the best exercise for this, you know, what's the best time to drink creatine or to consume creatine, you know, this, that they're just starting, they're not nailing their, you know, their sleep, they're not fully adhering to their training, like or nutrition, and yet they're worried about the small things. I think everybody should just be nailing the big three, and because that's going to provide, you know, 75 to 80% of your results anyway. Don't overwhelm yourself and just keep yourself to aiming to progress in the gym.
100%. Don't sweat the small stuff. Like I've had that with clients. Like they'll worry about, oh, like is this exercise better, or have I got enough work for my biceps? I'm like, right. If you look at the past 3 weeks, you've not nailed all your sessions. Like, why should we worry about your exercise selection when we're not performing the exercises that are selected? You know what I mean?
Yep, hang on.
Yeah, definitely. And jumping onto nutrition, if you're fine to jump onto it, unless there's anything
Sure
else.
thing, sure thing.
Do you want to start off? Is there anything off the top of my head, off the top of your head, sorry, that you see people make with their diet that they kind of go wrong with?
If they are trying to lose weight, like these liquid shakes need to go, man. These meal replacement shakes, man, that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people doing. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but there was an individual obviously that came in at the gym who was putting the work in the gym, but only consuming 1,000 calories per day using, you know, these slim fast shakes. That's absolutely crazy. That needs to go, that stuff, man.
Yeah, like I think from like a hunger management point of view, it's just not ideal. Like I always say to clients as well, it's like what's gonna fill you up? Like maybe eating orange or drinking like orange juice. Like typically one of the goals I try and get clients to aim towards is like consuming most, if not all, of their calories from actual solid foods, just from like a, you know, I mean, a hunger management point of view. Because if I was trying to bulk, then I'd utilize things like orange juices, smoothies. I mean, I'd blend foods. Whereas when you're if you think about like how long it takes for your stomach to digest an orange versus orange juice, or like a bit of steak versus whey protein. Not that whey protein is bad, and it's a great tool, and I'll use that when I'm dieting. And there's ways to make that more filling, but I think the former, the solid foods can definitely help in terms of the hunger management.
Yeah, man. Obviously, working with yourself, I've never actually seen you drink a protein shake. It's always mixed in with something that's obviously for hunger management. And if you're drinking all your calories, you're just going to suffer so much more, so much more.
Yeah, definitely. And I think something else I see people like go wrong with their diet is they'll try and fit all these tasty foods in. Like they'll be like, oh, I just had a wee chocolate bar here and there, or this here and there. Not that you need to, not that we should demonize any food, or you can eat certain foods and lose weight. But again, coming back to hunger management we spoke about earlier when we were talking about the carnivore diet, like what's going to fill you up more? And yes, you might enjoy it more, but is maybe having like that Ben and Jerry's worth that extra enjoyment in comparison to maybe like a tub of Halo Top low calorie ice cream, or just actual, you know, I mean, whole foods that are going to be more satiating? And probably because, like, although you might enjoy the Ben and Jerry's, like, does that make you crave more of it? Like I said earlier, like keeping your diet basic, I think, can be valuable for that reason.
Yeah, man. I obviously an experience as well. You do get people that will refuse to, you know, remove cola from their diet. For example, a can of cola. I need my can of cola a day. I absolutely need it. But like, if you're really going to do that, fair enough. A normal can of cola will give you 10 out of 10 levels of dopamine, right? A can of diet might only give you 6 or 7 out of 10 in levels of dopamine. It might only satisfy you that amount. But do you really, really need that extra? You know, that extra few markers for enjoyment. Do you really, really need that right now when you're trying to achieve something? And yeah, you know, calories in, calories out. It's obviously it's true. Yes, you can lose weight eating donuts, but you're not going to feel good. And as I was saying earlier on about the body screams, it's wanting nutrients. That is going to do nothing for you. You're going to feel terrible. You're going to perform terrible, and your hunger is going to go through the roof, causing you probably to binge and ruin a week's worth of progress.
I think it comes down to, again, kind of touched on it earlier, it's like, what do you value? Do you value having that kind of coach, or do you value results? You know what I mean, like, do you want to, it's either do you want to progress or not? And it's, well, right, well, that trade-off is worth you not moving forwards, and fair enough. Like, that's what I'll say to clients as well. It's like, my job's not to tell you what you can and can't do, but it's to manage your expectations. I think that's one of our main jobs as a PT. Like, right, that's fine if you want to do this and that, but don't expect to move forwards, or don't be frustrated with yourself, maybe be frustrated with yourself, but not myself, if you don't chip forward, because I've gave you the plan, I've gave you this to execute. We've tried to make sure it's sustainable for your lifestyle and the right goals for yourself. So if you choose not to execute that, then I think the quote, I know you love a quote yourself.
I know you were going to do it. That's why I was smiling.
I have to come in here, but don't be frustrated for the results you didn't work for, or that, or something along those lines.
I think it goes, don't be upset with the results from the work that you didn't do. I think that's the one.
100%. I love it. Alex Hormozy on the podcast here. Yeah, definitely. Right, so next up, how much time do you have left? I don't want to keep you too long, so there's obviously no pressure.
All the time in the world, mate. All the time in the world.
Nice one. Right, so next question. You've got someone coming in the gym, they've not touched a weight really, or they've not trained seriously in their life, they've not really been to the gym consistently. What advice would you give someone to start when it comes to, like, improving their body composition?
Well, if they're just wanting to improve their body composition, I'll give them three main tips, really. If it's me that's prescribing them the program, I would be giving them a program, definitely something to what they could adhere to. I think I get a lot of people as well when they come in, I want to train every day. And here's another quote, just because you're doing more doesn't mean you'll get more done. I like that one as well. But yeah, so like, in reality, if they've never really fully committed to the gym, they can overestimate kind of like what they can really adhere to. And if I give them a push pull leg split, you know, training 6 days a week, and it turns out they can't adhere to that, that can be really frustrating for them. If they can, I would just say, you know, pick a program, you know, if it's a 2 day, 3 day, 4 day program training split, pick whatever you could truly adhere to. And just try and progress with it over time. Don't frustrate yourself with all the minute details of training and all the other rubbish stuff for now. Just focus on that, aiming to progress in the gym. I would recommend that. I think, obviously, you're really big on your sleep, Charlie, but I think everybody could do well better with their sleep, man. I would focus on at least trying to get a minimum of 8 hours. Some people get about 6 hours sleep a night. You know, if you get to 7 or 8 hours consistently, good sufficient rest, try to progress in the gym, and try and honestly just go on with a whole foods diet, best you possibly can. Of course, it depending on if you really want to get into it, calories, getting it, tracking calories is, I think it's very beneficial, because you'll learn a lot about your own body and what you can and can't handle. But sticking to a whole foods diet, and what I will say as well, we're touching on earlier with the points that we made, is when you do switch to a whole foods diet and you actually see how much better you will feel mentally, physically, you actually develop like a feeling that you don't want to go back to eating a lot of bad foods because of how you feel. And then that will over time, it won't happen overnight, but over time, you will become a bit more strict and strict with your diet, because you want to progress and you love how you feel, and you'll feel good.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to answer your question, long way to answer it. Focus on your sleep. Choose a program that you can definitely adhere to. Try and progress with over time, over with weights and with reps, and just try and improve to a whole. Just at least try your best to stick to a 78% whole foods diet, and just see how you get on and take it from there.
I definitely agree with you there, and like you're saying, it feels good. And yeah, with the, I think everyone's going to be tuning out now, because we're just kind of saying the truth, saying the boring stuff, you know what I mean? But that's what works, you know what I mean? Doing the boring stuff well over time. It's not about what movement you're doing. It's not about what rep range you're working in or anything sexy, like that sort of thing. But again, people don't want to hear that. People want to hear this magical exercise, that magical exercise. And yes, you kind of commented on like what split to kind of choose when you're first starting out in that. And yeah, like you said, like what can you stick to? Because, and I think that's key. Like, I know it's cliche, you know what I mean? Like, compliance science or like consistency is key, but like it is. And like, see, if you've not trained before and weight trained, like, you don't need to do 8 sets per body part per session. You don't need to do a certain exercise. Like, you can just look at a weight and grow, really, because you're that new to it, because everything's new. Everything's a new stress that's going to cause adaptation. So literally just whatever you can stick to. And I think that's great, like having something you can adhere to. Because see, if like someone sets themselves up to aim to train 3 days a week, they train 2 days a week. Or sorry, they train, let's say they want to train 6 days a week, but they end up only training 4. They're going to become demotivated. They're going to reinforce they are an individual that doesn't tick their boxes. That's going to become one of their personality traits. If someone says, right, my goal is to train 3 days a week, they end up training 4. They are reinforcing they're an individual who ticks their boxes, who goes above and beyond. And that's going to build them as a character and reinforce that trait. And I think that's massive, because like, if you give someone something they can't stick to, then they're not even going to try. Whereas if it's achievable, it's going to keep them motivated. They're going to reinforce those positive traits.
Yeah, mate, bang on. I've actually had that a few times where like I've had a client who's convinced they're going to be training, you know, 5 to 6 days a week, and they do end up training less and end up altering the program. And I've actually had people have, you know, say, I'm only going to train twice a week, but then when they start seeing the results and like how well they're progressing, they want that extra third, maybe even fourth day, because they're just enjoying it, you know. So it's definitely not uncommon for that to happen.
Yeah, and to quickly add something else on, although it's good doing what you can stick to and that's important, like you can say that about everything. Like so like anyone can stick to training 1 day a week for 50 minutes, but so like do something you can stick to, do something sustainable, but also push yourself outside your comfort zone and like try and push your limits over time, and maybe start off only training twice, but then maybe move up to 3, move up to 4, because again, the more work you put in, the harder, or you don't get more results for doing more, to an extent. Someone who's training 1 time a week and they don't have a lot of training effort, more is going to be what they need to hear. They're like, the advice they need to hear is train harder, work harder. Some individuals on the other end of the spectrum may need to hear the opposite advice, but I think 90% of individuals need to hear the former. But so take that with a pinch of salt. Like, yes, obviously do what you can stick to, but also try and improve your adherence, improve your consistency, and push yourself over time.
Yeah, man, it's just getting back to just effort again. Effort's the biggest one for me, and like touching on when people, somebody asked me, well, what's the best exercise, you know, to work your chest, you know, I would make an argument that obviously you could make an argument that a chest press, if applied the maximum amount of effort, technique and stuff over time, you could make an argument that chest press might be more beneficial than say a bench press. But I would argue that the person who's training really, really hard week in, week out consistently on the bench press is going to gain a lot more results from an individual who is using a chest press kind of, you know, nonchalantly, maybe doing 3 sets of 12, not really increasing the weights or effort over time as well.
Yeah, definitely. So next up, we've got some questions, if you're happy to move on.
Sure thing, and no problem.
We'll quick fire them. It depends how, I don't know, we'll see how we get on with that. We probably won't manage to do well, but we'll just kind of, we don't need to do them, you know, extremely quickly, but we've got like quite a few and we want to kind of get through all of them and get back to everyone. So we'll make it somewhat concise while still giving like a good answer. So okay. First question, not really the shortest question to answer, to be fair, but pick one muscle group for each body part. Go.
Pick one muscle group for each body part?
Sorry, pick one exercise for each body part.
Shoulders. I mean, the shoulders are kind of vague. Can you give me like a body part, Charlie? Just help me a bit.
Right, we'll go one for your chest, one for your back, one for quads, one for hamstrings, one for shoulders. So first of all, chest.
Well, for me, I'm a weighted calisthenics guy. I really enjoy a weighted dip, so I'm gonna go with that.
Nice. For me, I'll go for a bit of a different kind of approach and say what I think's optimal on paper. I'd go like a good converging chest press where the handles come together. You can kind of get a good range of motion for the chest, nice and stable, locked in. Right, next up, we will go back. Name one exercise and why.
Is this like what I think is generally scientifically the best, or is it my opinion? By what, or is it like
I can pick me either. You've got one exercise you can pick for
you. For back, I would do a weighted chin up, because I think you can go to any gym in the planet and you'll find, you know, pull up, chin up bars. You won't always find your perfect machine everywhere you go. So that, and I personally enjoy them. I think it's a really, really good feeling being able to lift yourself, well, pull yourself up over a bar. And then when you're adding weights, it just, you just feel very, very good doing so.
Fair enough. I am going to say a dual arm pull down. And the reason being is you're going to train your lats. And when I get to the hamstring movement I'm going to choose, I'm going to explain why I'm choosing a lat focused movement where you're training overhead. So, right, we'll go next up. We'll go onto hamstrings now, actually. Hamstring movement, one.
Romanian deadlift, barbell, probably. The reason being is because it's going to work most of your posterior chain. And by that, I mean the whole backside of your body. It's going to work your lower back, which doesn't seem to get a lot of love, I think. Your hamstrings as well can contribute to a lot of low back pain as well if they're pretty tight. And I think you, obviously with every single rep, you will get a deep stretch of your hamstrings too, which I'm a big fan of, kind of getting to kill two birds with one stone, you know, stimulate the muscle whilst carrying it through a good range of motion as well.
Nice. I'm going to go basically RDL or a stiff leg deadlift variation, just something where you're pulling off the floor with your leg relatively straight. Reason being behind that is that's going to bias obviously your hamstrings, but also get a lot of upper back and erector work. And if you're choosing a lat pull down and then you've got like a deadlift variation to go with it, you're going to stimulate your upper back anyway, so that's kind of your back ticked off. Right, quads next, go.
Quads, hack squat. Because for me, a lot of people don't have the perfect dimensions to get down in a perfect deep squat. For me personally, I've not really met many people who can't use a hack squat to its full potential, or at least to get a really, really good result from it when they come down. So I get a maximum flex in my knee and feel a deep stretch in my quads. And so I'm able to train to failure all the way every time I use a hack squat. So I tend to opt towards that.
Nice. I'm going to go Smith machine squat, maybe heel elevated, but we'll just say a Smith squat. Reason being is it's a decent quad movement, it's stable, but it's also going to hit your erectors, your glutes, so you're going to get a bit more from it. Especially if you're only going to pick one movement, it would be ideal having a few more things hit during it. Right, next up, we'll go shoulders. We're not going to dive into like biceps, forearms, calves, things like that. What do you think for shoulders? What would you choose and why?
Oh, shoulders, obviously. I mean, if it's like, I like a cuff lateral raise, but if we're just going for front delts really here, I would probably say any form of machine press. I am a big fan of the standing barbell overhead press as an overall functional movement, but if you want to grow your shoulders, I think I'm a big fan of exercises that are stable, safe to push the failure, and can carry the muscle through a good range of motion. So any form of a good CT shoulder press machine or doing a high incline Smith would be beneficial.
Nice. I'd say high incline Smith also, or if I am including side and rear delts, which I was with the question, then I'd do a side delt movement, because you're not going to hit them much during your pressing, in my opinion. Right, so next up, what's your current split at the moment and what's your goals? We'll make this one quite concise so we don't ramble on too much.
Right, okay. So I right at this moment I'm training an upper lower split. I train 2 days upper, 1 day lower currently. I'm looking to get that to 2 leg days now that I have a bit more time. But I also do Muay Thai once a week and I run once a week as well. Pretty much I just want to be able to continue getting stronger. At the same time, I like learning a martial art. I think it's good for me and I like to run just so I can maintain a good level of cardiovascular fitness at the same time. I
Nice.
want to be kind of all well-rounded, really. That's my goal. I want to be able to continue to get stronger. I'm not immediately wanting to gain ridiculous amounts of size. I'm not really want to cut. I just want to be fit overall and strong.
As for me, just get as big as I possibly can, naturally, and compete again in men's open and be really competitive. I think eventually win a pro card would be a goal that I definitely want to set out to achieve. Most importantly, a sword, which is what you get from winning your pro card and winning an overall in a bodybuilding show. Which, regardless if I win the overall in a show, like the sword just looks cool and it'd be decent having a sword hanging up
Oh
in your
yeah.
room.
Oh
It's
yeah.
sort of place. Right,
Definitely.
next up, what's your go-to off-plan meal?
It's kind of changed over the years, man. Mean, if I really wanted to, I mean, I did used to love I used to love just ordering a Chinese, man. I like pizza. You know, I'm a food guy, Charlie. I'll eat anything. I like an Italian. I can't really choose. I would say pizza, but I've not
Right.
had a pizza in a year and a half. Any form of, takeaway. But do you know what? I'm going to pick one. I think Indian is the best cuisine. So I would like to go out for an Indian.
Nice. I was going to say Indian or a steak, alternatively Bucks Bar. Reason why Indian, pretty easy to fit into your calories, tastes decent, sits relatively well. Same with a steak, feels good for you. Bucks Bar, if you don't know, get to know. Best burgers. Best chicken burgers anyway in what well, or Scotland that I've had,
Definitely.
or best I've had. But as for the next question, so we'll challenge you. So give me a sentence explaining advice for working around injuries. Only one sentence.
Whatever you can do, do that.
Fair enough. That's quite a good one to be fair. I was pretty stumped. I was like, oh, why did I say one sentence? I'll say, do what doesn't hurt and increase it steadily over time. Right. So next up, exercises you see most butchered in the gym.
Lat pull downs. Yeah, I'd probably say lat pull downs probably one of the worst.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say this is quite like a maybe one you wouldn't expect, but tricep extensions. It's like the amount of clients, which is obviously fine, but like we'll do a tricep extension, they won't like keep their elbows back and they'll just kind of lose that tension, the stretch. Like it's so common. And the thing is, people don't like people, especially because it's a small arm movement, people don't have that attention to detail. So usually, like the form's not great on it. So that bent over row, that's probably moved to the top ones, to be fair.
Yeah,
Right,
definitely
next
tried
up.
to pay attention.
Someone asked, or Cammy asked, when is David competing?
Oh, I don't think I could compete, man. I've not completely ruled it out, man. If I've just got obviously goals now, I'm trying to just. I just train fundamentally because it's completely and utterly necessary to do so. If I can get stronger, look better, gain muscle at the same time, fantastic. I want to compete in Muay Thai as well. Maybe my opinion will change, but there'll be only one person I will be going to coach me through that process.
Wonder that would be a pleasure.
Yeah.
Right, next up, discuss your whys, like what drives you. And Deck said, hope you have a good one, team Deck.
Okay, what drives me? I I just want to be better. I just go to the gym every day just to try and just to improve, man. I wouldn't describe myself as motivated. I wouldn't say I'm unmotivated. It's just I think training is completely and utterly necessary, and I like improving myself. I like being, because right now at the moment in time, every single progression I make, I am better than I'm the best version of me that I've ever been, and I love that feeling. Simple as that. I just want to be better. I'll just keep showing up and just keep getting better every week in, week out.
Completely agree. I'm pretty much the exact same. I just enjoy the training, enjoy getting that extra rep. That's just a win that I can accumulate every day, regardless how much life sucks outside the gym. Like, I can step foot in the gym, tick that box, get that improvement, and also a few other wise, provide for my family, like my girlfriend, and just like make my dad proud. My dad's done an absolute ton for me in terms of when I've done judo. Took me to every competition. Got me to every training camp, bought whatever I needed to do well, flew me over to Japan for a week. Like, so a big part of my driving factor is to kind of make him proud and do well for him. And yeah, just gonna enjoy it.
I can absolutely confirm Charlie's dad's an absolute legend.
That's something that we're very confident on. That's biggest take home from the
Yeah.
podcast. Someone else very close to yourself said, "Why is David the champ?"
Very close to myself. I know who that will be. When the world is ready to hear that answer, I'll be happy to answer it, Charlie boy.
I do. Right. Last one is, where do people go wrong in reversing out of a diet? Or, in other words, for those that don't understand the question, when exiting a dieting phase?
So I would say when you do come out of dieting phase, your hunger is not going to stabilize. For some people, it might be fine after a couple of weeks. Some people, for me personally, I felt that my hunger hasn't returned back to normal for a couple of months. So it can be very common for people to just binge because they can't curb that hunger. But I think it's very important to understand your body's trying to readjust and to not, chuck away all that kind of effort and just pile on extra unneeded pounds that's of body fat that's not really needed at the moment.
Definitely. What I think people do wrong is, first of all, food choices. I think you should treat the phase after a diet the same as the diet. When you add food in, add it through foods that are going to be quote unquote diet foods. So, eating vegetables, big protein sources, even increase your protein coming out of a diet for satiety. And also things like, add plain foods, potato, white rice, Greek yogurt, oats. Don't add in quote unquote bulking foods or really calorie dense foods. Because again, you're just going to crave more of it. So add foods that are going to fill you up. And also, as well as that, consistency. It's like, if you just kind of relax as soon as your diet finishes, you'll gain the weight back. If you treat the phase post diet, just like the diet itself, still maintain your training, train stupidly hard. Even if you are a bit more relaxed with your diet, if you're still keeping up with training, getting a good amount of steps in, you're and maintaining those positive habits, your physique's going to reflect that and you'll maintain your progress.
Spot on.
Is there anything else you'd like to cover or go over before I let yourself go?
Off the top of my head, I'm actually pretty happy with what we've covered, Charlie. Have you got anything else you'd like to say?
We've covered everything, really. I just want to say thank you very, very much for coming on. I've really, really enjoyed it. I knew it would be a good and enjoyable episode for myself anyway, because we get along very well, and I think we had a great conversation here, and I'd love to get you on again.
100%, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me. It's actually my first experience doing a podcast, and I've really enjoyed it. I would love the opportunity to come back and discuss other things.
Excellent. My pleasure on my end. So yeah, thank you very much for everyone watching or listening. And David, is there anything you'd like to plug in terms of your personal training, any social media, etc.?
Yeah, well, you can just give me a wee follow on Instagram. It's David Retty underscore PT if anyone's interested in working with myself.
Perfect. I'll also link that in description for anyone who wants to check David out. And thank you very much for everyone watching or listening. Feel free to leave a like, rate and review, share it on your story if you did enjoy the podcast.